call the next case.
Steer v. Lee and others, Gigi Steer, pro se appellant, Dennis J. Quinn, and Therese Wayne L. Appellant.
Ms. Steer, before they start the clock, let me help you out a little bit. You probably watched from time to time when lawyers got up there and they'd say, one of them would say, well, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes or whatever. Sometimes they actually get their wish and sometimes they don't. But if you don't ask for it, you don't have that possibility. So I'm going to ask you at the outset, do you want to at least state that you'd like to reserve some time?
Please.
How much time would you like to reserve?
5 minutes.
5 minutes. All right. Well, hopefully you'll get to do that.
Thank you very much.
All right, you may proceed.
Okay. May it please the court, my name is Gigi Steer. I am the appellant. This is an appeal regarding a legal malpractice case and the exception to the requirement of an expert witness in a legal malpractice case when it is in the common knowledge and experience of a layperson. I retain Mr. Joseph Trapini, Jr., representing a personal injury case. Mr. Trapini caused my personal injury case to be dismissed with prejudice because he incorrectly named the defendant and allowed the statute of limitations to expire against the correct party, causing the action to be time barred. This despite being warned of his error at least 8 times. Mr. Trapini failed to take any action to cure his error. Subsequently, I filed a legal malpractice lawsuit against Mr. Trapini for negligence in representing me and a personal injury action. The trial court dismissed my case and entered judgment in favor of Mr. Trapini, as the trial court claimed an expert witness was needed, despite Mr. Trapini's gross negligence, which is apparent and does not require an expert witness to explain, as it is within the common knowledge and experience of a layperson. Even a child knows when an error is pointed out to correct it, and that is the issue of this appeal, whether an expert witness is required or not. On display, I have prepared a chart that details the exhibits from 1A to 8A. That is each time Mr. Trapini was warned of his error, beginning with the initial answer and continuing time after time. Each footnote reads, plaintiff improperly names Target Stores, Inc. as the defendant in this action. Target Stores is an unincorporated division of Target Corporation, which does business as Target Stores, is the only proper defendant in this action. The incorrectly named defendant alerted Mr. Trapini immediately with their answer as to who the correct entity was, warning after warning, but Mr. Trapini failed to act. Even some 20 months after the underlying lawsuit was filed, Mr. Trapini is still unclear as to the proper party and says, I think it's the correct name. Ultimately, the Alexandria Circuit Court, based on Virginia Code statutes and case law at the time, dismissed my underlying lawsuit with prejudice, ruling the statute of limitations had expired against the correct party. In fact, all motions of dismissal were due to Mr. Trapini's actions or lack thereof, and there was an additional motion of dismissal not ruled upon because of the dismissal with prejudice. Judge Dawkins also noted that Mr. Trapini had been warned many times of his error. The underlying named defendant noted that Mr. Trapini was put on actual and constructive notice and had ample knowledge, time, and opportunity to correct his error. Because of Mr. Trapini's negligence, I am forever precluded from obtaining a judgment against the proper party and being compensated for the damages I sustained. The Virginia Supreme Court, as well as other courts, have ruled when an attorney's lack of care and skill is so obvious that the trier of the fact can find negligence as a matter of common knowledge, an expert witness is not required, as in the case of Mr. Trapini, where he ignored all warnings of his error. It is only because of Mr. Trapini's error that a complex procedural history ensued. The underlying incorrectly named party warned Mr. Trapini just 29 days after Mr. Trapini filed the underlying lawsuit. It was Mr. Trapini's negligent actions, not strategic judgment, as Mr. Trapini says, caused my case to be dismissed. Although most cases such as mine are settled before any court action because the negligence is apparent and obvious and therefore nothing to contest, case law with lesser negligence than mine does exist. As in the case of Whitley versus Chambers, the Virginia Supreme Court rules expert testimony on causation would be improper as it would be legal opinion. As in the case of Beverly Enterprises, Virginia Inc. versus Nichols, the Virginia Supreme Court rules expert testimony is not required as issues were common knowledge and experience of a jury. This is commonly known as the Beverly exception. As in the case of Chicago Insurance Company Appellee versus Paulson and Nace Appellants, U.S. District Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, no expert testimony was required. Judge Wilkins said the Virginia State Court did all the expert legal work needed in dismissing the case based on Paulson and Nace's procedural error and nothing more than the dismissal with prejudice, which can be explained to a jury through lay testimony and court records. Mr. Dupuy suggests the proximate cause of my case being dismissed was due to strategic decisions, when in fact it was Mr. Dupuy's negligence of failing to correct his error. The Virginia Supreme Court is clear with the meaning of proximate cause, that being an act or omission that in natural and continuous sequence unbroken by a superseding cause produces a particular event and without which that event would not have occurred, as in the legal malpractice case of Williams versus Jones II et al., Virginia Supreme Court record number 080751, whereby the lawyer Jones failed to timely file the client Williams, Virginia action. The Supreme Court reversed lower court's partial summary judgment in favor of Jones and remanded the case. Also in the case of Brown versus Commonwealth of Virginia, Brown failed to stop after police signaled another officer began chase, and the officer struck an oncoming car, killing the driver. Brown argued it was not he who hit and killed the driver of the car, but the police officer. The Supreme Court agrees. Brown put into operation the high-speed chase, causing the policeman to hit the vehicle and kill the driver. Brown's conviction for involuntary manslaughter was affirmed. Also in the case of Jefferson Hospital, Inc. versus Van Leer, Virginia Supreme Court, a patient Van Leer sued the hospital because he got out of bed after he fell, after staff failed to respond to his call bell to go to the restroom. Judgment was awarded to Van Leer. The Supreme Court concurs with the lower court that as a consequence of the hospital's neglect, failure to answer the call bell, the patient would get out of bed. The Supreme Court affirms Van Leer's judgment. In the brief of the appellees, Mr. Trapini cites a lot of case law regarding the requirement of an expert witness in legal malpractice cases, but the cases are not similar to mine and fall into one of several categories that include advice given by the attorney, complaints of quality of representation, including tactical decisions, and research and other individual complaints. But none of the case law resembles the gross negligence or circumstances of my legal malpractice case, whereby the lawyer first named the wrong party and then was continually warned and took no action whatsoever to correct the error. The first category of case law Mr. Trapini cites involves client complaints of their lawyers, as in the case of Ripper versus Bain, where the client Ripper alleged negligence based upon the lawyer Bain's furnishing legal advice in connection with a real estate transaction, as well as Gregory versus Hawkins. The second category of case law Mr. Trapini cites involves client complaints regarding quality of representation of their attorneys. Such are the cases of Pink versus Bauman, Applegate versus Debevoir, Oakes and Gebhardt, and Marbury Law Group versus Carl. All of the case law cited include various issues. In the case of Short versus Immigration Reform Law Institute, Short, the client, fails to identify the legal error. In the case of Carenza versus Frost, the lawyer failed to file paperwork necessary for settlement. In the case of the Cattle Company versus Sweden, Brazo, PC, et al., the lawyers failed to answer the first set of requests for admission. But none of the case law resembles the negligence of my legal malpractice case. The rules of the Supreme Court of Virginia, Rule 320, summary judgment states summary judgment shall not be entered into if any material fact is genuinely in dispute. I provided and presented to the trial court voluminous evidence, documents, and case law to prove expert testimony was not required in my case, as well as the existence of a contract, breach, and neglect that caused my underlying personal injury case to be dismissed with prejudice, and forever precluding me from obtaining compensation for my catastrophic, permanent, and lifelong medical, financial, and loss of quality of life damage. There is a wealth of case law where higher courts have reversed lower court summary judgments, decisions based upon expert testimony not being required. And Flynn versus Pollard, Ohio Court of Appeals, 2017. The lower court granted summary judgment to the attorney because no legal expert was designated, but the Court of Appeals rules expert testimony is not required as a breach is within the ordinary knowledge of lay people and reverses the lower court summary judgment and remands. In George v. Tatum, 1979, New Mexico, the lawyer failed to file the plaintiff's wrongful death lawsuit. The lawyer said no attorney-client relationship existed and was awarded summary judgment. Plaintiff appeals and the court reverses lower court's decision. Court states it does not require expert testimony to establish negligence of an attorney who is ignorant of the applicable statute of limitations or who sits idly by and causes the client to lose the value of his claim for relief. The appeals court reversed the lower court summary judgment and Valentine v. Water, Supreme Court of Alabama. Summary judgment was granted for the attorney. Supreme Court reversed and remanded and said the defendant attorney is negligent as a matter of law, and all of these cases a much lesser degree of negligence than mine. And I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
All right.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Dennis Quinn, and I represent Joseph Trapini, who was sued by Ms. Siri in the underlying legal malpractice case.
Excuse me, counsel, for just a second. Ma'am, do we need to move that so you can see everything?
Okay.
Sorry, pardon the interruption.
That's okay, Justice. Ms. Siri needed an expert witness to testify to prove breach, duty breach, and causation.
Thank you.
She makes a very good argument as to the common knowledge exception. And one of the challenges here is that we don't really have a lot of case law defining what falls in the common knowledge. In my review, I would suggest that it's something that's so obvious that no one can disagree with, that no two professionals or no two lay jurors could disagree that a mistake was made. The common example given in medical malpractice cases is leaving a sponge or a surgical instrument inside an incision. No doctors are going to disagree that was a mistake. You don't have to be a doctor to recognize you're not supposed to leave a sponge inside an incision. It gets a little bit harder with legal mal. The example that comes up a lot is missing a deadline or failing to file a lawsuit before the statute runs. But even there, there's case law saying that doesn't always fall within the common knowledge exception. We cited to the McCabe-Miller case, which is a circuit court from Napa. It was a complicated employment discrimination case. The circuit court said, too complicated, it doesn't fall within the common knowledge exception. We also cited a case from Federal District Court in D.C., Carranza v. Fraz, actually a case I argued, which involved missing a deadline in an agriculture, Department of Agriculture proceeding. The court said, there's too many rules, too many regulations, doesn't fit within the common knowledge exception. I know Ms. Siri has argued quite eloquently that this was obvious, that he named the wrong party, that he didn't fix his mistake. But it's not that obvious. It's far more complicated than that. I think if he had sued Walmart instead of Target, that would probably fit within the common knowledge exception. That's not what happened here. He took the name that Target filed with the State Corporation Commission. They say, our name in Virginia is Target Stores, Inc. Target appeared, defended, removed the case to federal court, and in all their pleadings, they did put the footnote, as Ms. Siri pointed out. They pointed out what their real corporate name is. We don't concede that was a warning. We think that was just their statement as to what their corporate name was. Mr. Trapini took a Rule 41 dismissal, which acted as a non-suit in this case. When he refiled, he put Target Corporation, the name that they told him he should have put. And Target argued, too late. You should have used that name in the last case. Both parties briefed it. There was a lot of case law involved here. The initial hearing was before Judge Haddock in Alexander Circuit Court. Judge Haddock kind of threw his hands. He said, I don't know what name Target's using here. I mean, there was paperwork as a Target Corporation. There was paperwork saying it was Dayton Hudson Corporation was the name of the corporation. Judge Haddock said, I have no idea what Target's real name is. I'm going to deny your motion. You can go off and do discovery. The case went on for 2 years. Mr. Trapini actually got out of the case and a new attorney came in. Target renewed their motion, had a second hearing in front of Judge Dawkins. There, Judge Dawkins ultimately granted a motion to dismiss. But if you read the briefs in the underlying case, This was not just the wrong party and the statute. There was talk about, there was dealing with misnomer, statute of limitations regarding the non-suit, the interplay between Rule 41 of the federal rules and the non-suit statute. Mr. Cipini argued the related back doctrine, that this was a misnomer and therefore it related back to the original one, so the statute of limitations under the non-suit statute was stayed. This was anything but simple. I don't know how that fits within the common knowledge exception. There's a lot of case law that has been cited. I think the case on point here is your case on Price Waterhouse, which is an accounting malpractice case in 1990. The rule this court set then was expert testimony is necessary in a professional liability case unless it falls within the common knowledge exception. There they referred to, you referred to, the court generally accepted auditing standards and said that's too complicated. That doesn't fit within the common knowledge exception. We think that rule applies here. I don't know how Ms. Siri can present her case without expert testimony. She can't just say that they named the wrong party. The allegation in the complaint that she has argued in her briefs is when he named the wrong party, he should have done something else.
Well, the whole misnomer or misidentification debate is split the court.
Thank you, Judge. As you well know from the Richmond v. Vogt case, this issue came before the court. As we pointed out in our brief, I think very reasonable justices disagreed on that. I'm not taking a position as to what side was correct there, but I think Justice Powell was looking at you when I said that. I think if the target litigation had been argued after the Richmond v. Vogt case, Judge Shawkins would have ruled very differently. So you also just can't say that because he found that the wrong party was named, that's automatically legal malpractice. His decision doesn't define legal malpractice, because I think his decision would be different today. And that's what Mr. Cipini argued. He argued the same thing that was argued in the Vogt case, that he had the real entity. Everyone knew Target was the right entity. Target was there. They presented their witnesses who were deposed in the case. There was no confusion. Again, he didn't sue Walmart. And if the court were to follow the Vogt opinion, if it were in place, then they would have said that was a misnomer. So, but I'm not here arguing that he didn't commit legal malpractice. The issue here is whether she needs expert testimony. Who will tell the jury what a Nazi is? Who will explain the interplay?
You're not conceding either malpractice or negligence.
No, sir, I'm not.
You're not conceding negligence.
We were prepared to defend this on the merits in the underlying case. Who's going to tell a jury that Mr. Cipini should have filed a motion for leave to amend the original complaint to substitute Target Corporation versus Target Stores, Inc.? That's a legal opinion. And the allegation that she makes is that's what he should have done. It's a solid legal opinion. She can't tell the jury that. She can't testify to that because then she's offering expert testimony. So from a practical matter, Judge McCulloch, I know you asked a lot of questions about practical matters earlier. I don't know how she can physically put on this case. It's just her. She doesn't have a lawyer. So if it's remanded, she cannot persuade or prove or meet her burden of proof as to what the standard of care was and how it was breached. So it's easy to hear her. And again, she's done a wonderful job representing herself. But it's not just naming a wrong party and letting the statute run. If we remand this case, they're going to hear testimony from my side about all the legal factors, the interplay between two statutes, the case law dealing with that. We're probably going to hear about Richmond v. Vogt as well, about what the misnomer means. She can't just talk about that. She needs an expert to do that. And so we think the circuit court ruled correctly. We think the rule of law here is that expert testimony is required and that the exception doesn't apply. If Justice, if you have any questions for me, I'd be happy to answer them.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ma'am, you have 5 minutes remaining if you need to use it.
I just want to address two things Mr. Quinn said. The first thing is Judge Dawkins did make this decision in 2010, and that was using all the case law available at that time. That is when he did dismiss my case in Alexandria Circuit Court. And the second thing is, but for Mr. Trapine's actions, if he had just heeded any one of those warnings, and corrected his error, we would not be having the conversation or the litigation we're having. He completely ignored all warnings, and that's why we are here. And I just wanted to add, an attorney is liable for any damage sustained by the client because of the attorney's negligence. Mr. Trapini faults others for my case being dismissed when he is the only party responsible. Mr. Trapini maintains Judge Dawkins of Alexandria Circuit Court misapplied statutes, doctrines, and rules. Judge Dawkins heard all evidence, including case law, at that time and applied statute and codes and ruled accordingly. The underlying named defendant noted that Mr. Trapini was put on actual and constructive notice and was provided with ample knowledge, time, and opportunity to correct his error. Mr. Trapini's actions or lack thereof was the subject of all motions of dismissals with an additional motion not ruled upon because of the dismissal with prejudice. Secondly, Mr. Trapini blames the underlying named defendant for having confusing information at the Virginia State Corporation Commission. Despite Target Corporation's warning Mr. Trapini of his error on at least 8 occasions, Mr. Trapini argues that Target Corporation defended the lawsuit, but if they had not, a default judgment could have been entered against them, as in the case of Specialty Hospitals of Washington, LLC versus Rappahannock Goodwill Industries. Supreme Court Record Number 102196, March 2, 2012. They did not respond to a lawsuit as they thought they were the wrong party being sued. Target Corporation did what any reasonable and competent named defendant would do. They responded immediately with their answer, pointed out the error, and even gave their correct name. Thirdly, Mr. Trapini even blamed me. Mr. Trapini never disclosed that his error was the cause for all the motions of dismissals, but instead said that is what the defendants all did. In addition to not disclosing his error, as his error was the cause for all the motions of dismissals, Mr. Trapini attempted to cover up the fact. 2 weeks after Judge Haddock's hearing, where Mr. Trapini was still unclear as to the proper name, he wrote me a letter saying that he anticipates defense attorney will seek dismissal of the case on the grounds that evidence does not establish that the Target employee was negligent, and insists I give him authority to settle the case. Mr. Trapini never told me that his error was the actual cause of the motion of these dismissals. It is not until I retained another attorney that I learned that this had been an ongoing issue, and all motions of dismissals were due to Mr. Trapini's error of incorrectly naming the defendant in my case. The Supreme Court consistently holds even slight damage sustains the cause of action for legal malpractice, Shipman versus Crook, Virginia 2004, as well as Virginia law, did not require me to present expert testimony, as Mr. Trapini's lack of care and skill is so obvious that negligence can be found as a matter of common knowledge and common sense. Mr. Trapini's failure to correct his error despite being warned 8 times was obvious and a gross want of care and skill, and that is clear to a layperson. But for Mr. Trapini's negligence, I would have presented my case to a jury and would have received a significant judgment for the damage that I sustained. I am forever precluded from obtaining a judgment against the proper party and being compensated for the catastrophic physical and monetary damage that I have sustained. Although Mr. Trapini had ample knowledge of his error, time, and opportunity to correct it, Mr. Trapini failed to act like a reasonable person would, let alone an attorney. Even a child knows when an error is pointed out, you correct your mistake. As summary may be granted, when no issue of material fact remains in dispute and the moving party is entitled to judgment as a matter of law, the trial court's final ruling is clearly wrong and erroneous. In fact, I requested cross-summary judgment of the trial court based on the facts of the case, including the gross negligence, applicable laws, codes, and case law. He owed me a duty through our relationship, client relationship. Mr. Trapini acted negligent, breached that duty by naming the wrong party, and moreover, failed to correct his error despite being warned of his error at least 8 times. Mr. Trapini's negligence and failure to act caused my case to be dismissed with prejudice, and that's why I asked you to reverse the lower court's decision and whatever decision you feel is just and correct to award that, and thank you very much for your time. And I have an opportunity to present my case to you.
Well, thank you for your argument. We will take this matter under advisement, discuss it, and you'll hear from the clerk of the court in writing.
Thank you very much.
All right. Have a nice day.
Thank you. You too.
Call the next case.